Thank you very much to Mr. Hutter and Mr. Border. As promised, we are right on time because we've all been very disciplined. They all took into account the traffic light. We will start with the Q&A now. A lot of questions have been answered already. Maybe not all questions can be answered because not all speakers are in the room now. The first question is rather long, but it could go to Christina von Braun, and this is why I would like to read it out. Nietzsche's genealogy of moral was mentioned. Marie zu Lazzarato spoke about social order and power relationships between creditors and debtors. And this is due to guilt and Christianity. Christina von Braun says that the sacrificial semantics is important here. I think it is problematic to reduce Christianity to guilt. Redemption according to Christianity is possible due to charity and the relationship with God. This can be experienced in life and not only after death. Could this approach be a liberalization? Also with a view to work, although faith cannot be proven scientifically, but forgiveness is vital to Christianity, and this could open up new perspectives. Dear Christina, may I ask this to you? Well, I'll try to answer this. I can say, first of all, this has never existed. Even if this redemption existed, redemption through faith, we can say that it has not worked historically, and it is a great hope that we can accept as such. I think this is a comment about Christian faith. Its honor should be maintained, and I fully accept this. I simply have to say that we are still waiting for redemption. Rather on the contrary, we rather have a situation of strengthened functioning of the sacrificial idea in the Christian cultural area. So I fully accept your hope, but I don't see a historical reason for this. So thank you very much. The next question is to Eric Briand, and it is about of the meaning of the history of shape of probability. In relationship to coincidence and events, I don't have a very clear wording of the question. If it is a material, maybe you refer to a notation system, symbol systems, etc. Eric Briand, where is he?
Yes, I am dealing. Okay, this is a matter of calculation of the material conditions of this calculation, including the capacity for paper to circulate, for information to circulate. And this is to be studied. So concretely, if there is a student who wants to work with me, he will have to study this kind of thing. As an output of this kind of study, it is possible to show that the shape of uncertainty as recorded is not can display variations in the history, can display variations according to the type of recording. For instance, if you it has been possible to check that using databases by economical historians, whatever. But if you check the structure of the randomness of financial information in the 19th century and the structure of randomness in 20th century, it is, especially at the end of the 20th century, the shape is different. Shape, but it's very interesting. And so, after the question is, the fact that For instance, when Valras, excuse me for this French example, but when Valras organized the French trade, the French market bourse system, when he organized that using a Keynesian way of understanding, saying, okay, a price will be the average of this one, but we shall take it as the price. What does that mean concretely in the transformation of this randomness? Voilà. So welcome for this kind of study if the person who has addressed the issue wants to work on this.
Thank you very much. Die nächste Frage richtet sich offenbar an einen
Thank you very much. The next question goes to an economist, apparently. I don't want to reveal the name. I'll read it out. If it is correct that the money quantity is highly fictitious, what are the victims of the winners of world? What sacrifices should the first world make so as to achieve a realistic level? Mr. Prader, do you want to answer this question? Just a proposal that you might start. Well, this is a very complex question. It shows a complexity of the context, and it can't be solved by an answer. What does the entire money quantity mean? We do have various currencies. We've got sub-currencies as well. And we even have credit systems that function with currency but are not counted. We do have illegal money. So how do you want to grasp the topic? It's an intellectual game to say what would happen if, but you can't deal with systems like this. But there's a second question here. Is it useful to limit one's own consumption? People with hardly any means need to do that anyhow. So it is a question of luxury. What about the disposable income? It could be shifted. Simplify your life is a fad. And this is a luxury fashion. What do I need? One table, one chair, and one bed, and then it looks fantastic. But, as it were, this is not really lifestyle, is it? Because you need to deal with the things that you need. We don't think about a lot of things, but we are incited by systems of tokens, signed by rooms of affection, etc. And we are aware of this, but we can be incited due to the fact that we are humans. What do I want? What do I not want? You would have to think about it. I think rationality is great, but for the ordinary men, it can't be used all the time. We can't be as rational as you could be reasonably. So I'd be careful about this program because the prerequisite would be to tell everybody how he should behave and how the overall system will react. Well, I don't know. You wanted to add something. I liked your answer, but I can add something to it. There's the money quantity and then are the debts. These are short-term debts and most of the time they come from abroad. They have nothing to do with our wealth and your wealth. People owning the money have the money in the banks. They don't spend it, so it is not effective. It doesn't have any effect on the real development and inflation, but I would warn you to look at this. At the end of the 60s, early 70s, we had exactly the same situation in the US and in parts of Western Europe. There was this huge push of inflation, and they were triggered from the outside due to the increased oil price in the 70s and the scarcity of grain, the harvest problems in Russia. And then people would like to get rid of their money because otherwise it would have a decreased value, and this would be an inflationary situation. And the funny thing about an inflation is it's like a tank. Once you put it in motion, it's very difficult to stop it. But what triggers the movement of the tanker? This is a different question. Thank you very much. I've got another question to an economist. No, I would like to say something first of all. Sorry. The term of realistic money quantity. Reality happened yesterday. to put it clearly, there is no reality. We create our reality from fiction every single day. And what we can currently observe is that the central banks put a lot of money into the market so as to restore confidence. But then Mrs. Merkel has a great influence, and they want to make sure that we don't spend too much money. And this is the room for maneuver for the money. This is then acceptable. And behind this game, there is no reality. Maybe I can interpret this. On behalf of the person asking a question, we made the difference between the real economy and the finance economy, and this is why this question was raised, I suppose. I think it is possible to understand the question. Another question to an economist, to Mr. Leopold Seidler, but as far as I can see, he's no longer in the room. Yes, he's there, over there. Perfect. Mr. Seidler, question to you. Do we still have enough money for the welfare and social state, and where is the money? Question to me. I don't understand why this is a question to myself, but I can answer in the affirmative, but I do not know where. We definitely do have enough money for the social state. If taking into account the economic society, if we interpret the letter G not as growth, but genug, which is the German term for enough, if we redistribute the wealth, we do have enough for everybody. It is a lie to tell and explain to the people in the world that this is not sufficient, but we need to accept the fact that we need to renounce on certain things, we here in the first world. And I do believe that wealth is created like a wave going over the globe. In the Middle Ages, the situation in Europe was dramatic, and in China the situation was brilliant. So the wave went westwards, and now this means that there are opportunities for other social strata and other countries. And if we renounce on certain things, I think we'll have enough for the whole, for all the people. And someone else was asking about a new approach. There is a very nice calculation done by Hans-Peter Dürer. He won the Alternative Physics Prize, and he calculated a specific figure. I would like to mention it so that we make sure that we don't have a philosophical discussion only. We get an energy equivalent on Earth every single day that can provide us with energy. If you calculate this energy coming from the universe, you get energy slaves, as Mr. Dürer said, that is humans. Humans can can provide work to the extent of approximately 200 watt. If you calculate the solar energy in energy slaves, then you find out how much energy is available on Earth for everybody. And Mr. Dürer calculates how many watt people can have in Europe and America and Asia, etc. We do have an average of 100 energy slaves per person per day. The Americans use 150 energy slaves a day, Europeans use 130, an African only 3 energy slaves. So there are enough for everybody. And I would like to quote Mr. Dürer. He says, if we give the equivalent amount of energy to everybody who can have this energy, then this means that wealth will decrease in Europe. And this would be like a Swiss person in 1965, and I think we will all manage to bear with that. A question to Elisabeth Weber. Question is, we belittle torture after torture was belittled after the financial crisis, and then we had a financial crisis in 1907. So what does the future hold in store? Well, I would like to say something very briefly. I'm sorry. I can't answer these general questions. I'm not competent for this. I'm really sorry about this. But what you can say is that torture, unfortunately, does have a future because not enough people criticize it. And I would like to point your attention to what Mr. Seiler said earlier on. people need to phone up their MPs and they need to talk to them and they need to become active so as to make sure that this will no longer take place. But this does not happen. People don't do that. There are just some exceptional cases, of course. Well, luckily enough, some organizations fight against torture. But it is an issue in which guilt definitely plays a major role. But it is a form of guilt that one does not want to assume in the Western world, it appears. And this is why most people close their eyes in front of it, because it's a very uncomfortable topic, of course. And I also would like to point out that in torture, we discussed this today in the afternoon, that people are marginalized in torture. They are either depicted as the worst of the worst or even as animals. And this torture technology, thus, is linked to the old Roman torture, because for a certain period of time, the old Romans only tortured those who were considered to be animals anyhow. So there are a lot of historical examples to that. There are a lot of historical links that are possible, but the very specific question is something I cannot answer, unfortunately. But my pessimistic outlook is the follows. Torture is a fact today, and I am afraid that in the future this will remain as it is in the future, except if many people fight against torture in the future. Thank you very much. Last question that we received goes to almost everybody. It will not be easy to answer, but I'm asking the economists, what is a value and what is a price and what is the relationship between the two? Who would like to answer the question? Well, I had the great pleasure when I was at the Humboldt University in the first year, I attended a symposium on Karl Marx, and I was very proud because I've always thought that Karl Marx has been a great economist, as all the other economists who were thinking about the distribution of resources that are not endless. So if I have this microphone holding in my hand, you can't have it, of course, because I'm having it. We need to develop methods of sharing so that you either share things or produce things or do not produce things. Alfred Marshall, Paul Simon and Karl Marx all thought about these things. And a lot of people are asking about what is a value. And Karl Marx said a value is the work that you find inside something. And this is a very simple but clever idea at the same time, but it is wrong. You can prove it by trade. People are willing to get away from this work content because, as a matter of fact, there are differences. I want to have the toothpaste much more than you do, and this is why I'm willing to pay more for it, irrespective of the number of works to be found inside the toothpaste. And this is the difference between subjective value theories and an objective one. And to me, the value of an object is a crucial question to us. But then you have everyday business, you have trade, And this is where subjective assessments become important. Unfortunately, we are all individuals. Otherwise, we would be really boring, like Crusoe. We have a lot of interesting people, and some people renounce on certain things. I, for example, I don't want to have a BMW, but I've got friends who are simply in love with BMW. And luckily, we do have this world, because otherwise, we would all be absolutely the same. Christina, would you like to say something on it? From a non-economic perspective, yes. Adam Smith answered this. He said, for example, a diamond on the market can be very worthy, very costly, but it can be useless. So it has a great value, but it is useless. He pointed out a lot of examples to show the value of things. And he also raised the question about price. He said diamonds cost a lot of money, but they do not have the same value as water, for example. Water is really, really important for humans. And I think this is a good approach to shed light on these categories. Thank you very much for this additional statement. I think after a long marathon without a break, we've come to an end, and you bore with us, just like our speakers. So thank you very much to all the panelists. And we will have a theatre play at 20:30 p.m. later on. And if you do not want to see the theatre play, you can come back if you wish so. You can come back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We will start with a presentation by Elena Esposito. Thank you very much.